Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Live from the corner of Broadway and Battery, this is 95.7 The Game.
All right, good Sunday morning to you. John Dickinson and Michael Urban with you for the next 4 hours. 888-957-9570. 888-957-9570. We'll double up that legal ID.
Sure.
And we'll tell people coming up at 9, 10, and 11 that you're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco. Hour number one of the program. Herbs, it's been a while since we've had the pleasure of working together, so it should be fun here.
Yeah, I'm having the best time already, and the show hasn't even started yet.
Yeah. John Taylor, MLB writer, Sports Illustrated, is going to join the program here in the 8 o'clock hour. Robert Mays, he covers the NFL for The Ringer. Dalton Johnson, and I'll call our last guest a friend of the program, Dieter Kurtenbach.
Sure.
Friend of the program.
Always available.
Always available, ready to come on and ready to just spew hot takes left and right.
Exactly. Oh, man. So how are you feeling about your Giants these days?
Giants win last night. Logan Webb comes up. Major league debut.
22 years old. Woo.
And he got roughed up a little bit in the first inning. I mean, it was, I don't even think, I barely had the channel change to have the game on, and Logan Webb was already down 1-0.
Yeah.
And looked like he was in a little bit of trouble. But he battled through it, and the Giants find their way coming back in that game, and they get themselves a win. It was 2-0, actually, at the end of the first. The 5-run second, Brandon Belt with the big shot, the grand slam. And Pilar, a 5-hit game, another night where somebody that Farhan Zaidi brought in from somebody else's
outside,
organization
yeah.
has a huge night. And all of a sudden, the Giants, they gain ground on Washington and Philly. They keep pace with the Cubs, the Brewers, and the Mets. They're still 2.5 out of that second wild card with all those teams I mentioned involved. But they got Madison Bumgarner on the hill today going for a 4-game sweep in Arizona.
The glass half full people look at that 2.5 back, right? That's all they look at. Or 2.5 back. Don't tell me anything else. 2.5 back. The glass half empty people are looking at the number of teams that they have to leapfrog. All I'm looking at is an exciting baseball team that I didn't think the Giants were capable of doing that this year. And like last night's game, did you ever think that the Giants this year in 2019 were going to be a team that just give us enough pitching, the offense will take care of the rest? None of us ever thought the offense would be anywhere close to this powerful. And you're right, it's guys from the outside that are doing a lot of damage.
I didn't think when they were 12 games under 500 near the end of June that there would be any chance. I actually didn't think at any point all year, maybe after the first week or two of the season, that this team would be 2 games over 500 at any point.
No way. I mean, the opening day lineup was almost like, okay, we knew it was going to be rough. We knew the rebuild, we're going to see a lot of familiar faces, but man, that opening day lineup just smacked you in the face and said, yes, this is in fact a rebuild. But like we were talking before the show, JD, for me, a successful season for the Giants was, did you identify a number of guys that you know can be part of the solution moving forward? And, you know, on the other end of things, you probably found out about, okay, this guy's not going to work, this guy's not going to work. Being a San Francisco Giant prospect right now, it's the land of opportunity. And that, you know, similar to the way the A's used to be. It's just, we'll give a bunch of young guys a chance, sink or swim. And if you swim, great, you're with us. If you sink, probably never hear from you again. I have a feeling there's a lot of guys on this Giants roster that we're not going to see next year, but Farhan Zaidi has a list saying, here's the guys I know I have to hang on to.
Well, and it's interesting because if you just go around the roster, and you know Buster Posey was going to be around because he's Buster Posey and he's under contract, even though he's a declining player at this point. Brandon Belt has been a good player, a solid player, I think, throughout his career, but he's never blossomed into the type of player that I think Giants fans thought he would be. Although he was a player that helped them win a couple of championships along the way. But I think the belief was Brandon Belt was going to be a carrier. He was going to be Freddie Freeman or Joey Votto or, you know.
Right.
He was going to be a carrier, a guy that Brandon Belt is the face of this franchise, one of them offensively.
Mm-hmm. You look at his career in the minor leagues, and everywhere he went, he struggled when he first got there. And then after a while, a month, 2 months, he'd just start raking and hit like 420 and force the club to promote him to the next level. So when he got to the big leagues, we already knew about him and how he's just killing minor league pitching. He comes to the big leagues. He struggles initially, and all of a sudden people are thinking, oh, it's fine. He'll figure it out. He always struggles at the new level. I remember Bruce Bochy telling me the same thing. And so people kept waiting. All right, well, when does he settle into that groove and start hitting 420? We're waiting for it. And it just never came. Brandon Belt is probably the most polarizing member of the Giants since, I don't want to put it at the Zito Bonds level, but he is polarizing. There are no fans that say, yeah, I'm all right with Brandon Belt. It's either I love Brandon Belt or that guy's a bum, get rid of him.
So you've got Brandon Belt still around. You got Brandon Crawford still around. Evan Longoria is somebody with his contract, I believe, signed through 2022 that if you're Farhan Zaidi, you're essentially stuck with.
Yep.
So you've inherited some players that bring fond memories to the fan base and are signed and are less than productive. So what's your first course of action if you're coming in, you're Farhan Zaidi? You try and fix every other position that you can.
Right.
And I think he shuffled through a lot of different players to try to do it. The Connor Joes and the Michael Reeds and the Solartes. And I mean, I'm trying to think of all the different, you know, Gerard Parra was on the Giants at one point at the beginning of the year.
Connor Joe's going to be remembered a lot longer than most guys who play for the Giants, like for full seasons. But just because he's Connor Joe,
well,
he was the opening day.
He became the face of the first month, let's say, of Farhan's tenure.
Right.
But he shuffled through, and all of a sudden, what he's found, and the reason the Giants have been successful and they've been able to get hot, is he found ancillary pieces, guys off the scrap heap. He found players kind of out of nowhere that produced at the level that the Buster Posey's and the Brandon Belts and the Brandon Crawfords haven't for years.
Right.
So it's almost allowed those guys to be role players, and the new guys are the guys carrying the freight. Mike Yastrzemski, 16 home runs. Kevin Pillar, 5-for-5 last night. He's pushing 20 home runs.
JD, they might have two 20 home run hitters in the same season, the Giants.
Pretty remarkable, right?
I'm so glad for Bruce Bochy that he's getting to manage it. Watch the way he's managing these games, JD. Every game is a playoff game. The way he's using the bullpen, it's like playoff boats kicked in a couple of months earlier in case they don't make it to the playoffs. I don't expect him to, but man, I'm glad Bruce gets to manage games like this down the stretch.
By the way, Jalen Davis, have you heard what this guy's doing?
No.
Sacramento?
Mm-mm.
He comes over in the Sam Dyson trade from the Twins organization, and he has 5 home runs at AAA in the last 2 games. Hit 3 home runs Friday night. Now, it is in Reno.
Still, got to hit the ball. Got squared up.
Couple more home runs last night. He's got over 30 home runs in the minors between he started the year AA Twins organization, moved up to AAA. The Twins organization. The Giants acquire him from Minnesota in the Sam Dyson trade. So he comes over, he goes to AAA for the Giants, and you add it all up, and he's got, I want to say, 31 or 32 home runs now.
Wow.
In the minor leagues for his 2019. Right-handed bat outfielder.
I can't remember the last time I heard about a Giants prospect who is a legitimate power threat and projected to be a 20 to 30 home run hitter.
So this guy's just, right now, they can't really get him up.
Right.
They can't get it, you know, because the way the roster's composed and they need a lot of pitching, and they're finagling through the bullpen to try and make up for some of the guys that they sent away. And,
right.
and that may be the biggest surprise to this point since the deadline. And look, the Giants were, 1-6 immediately after the deadline? It looked like, this isn't going
to be good.
The
timing was weird. It was uncanny.
But they're getting hot again. They take 3 or 4 from the Phillies. They split with the A's. So you're looking at a 4-2 and now 7-9 if you take, you know, the first three games of this Diamondback series, and you got Bumgarner going today. So you're trying to go 8. So maybe they're getting hot again. The biggest surprise, though, to me is the fact that I really only count one game where, and it was one of the first games that first week in Colorado, one game where the difference in bullpen depth may have cost them a game that they would have won otherwise. Mm-hmm. That's been the surprise, and that's, you know, Farhan's a sharp guy. He can kind of map out exactly how much to expect you're going to lose when you take away a couple of bullpen arms that have been pitching well.
Right, and if there's any manager well-equipped to deal with a depleted bullpen, I mean, what do we think of? When I think of Bruce Bochy, what makes Bruce Bochy great? Yeah. My first thought is the way he handles bullpens. And he has to get creative sometimes, but this is what I mean by saying he's managing like their playoff games. I mean, he's going into, I think, every game. You know, when you're in the playoffs, you go into a game having some sort of an idea of who's going to pitch when and what's plan B, what's plan C. And I think that energizes Boch. And I think he sees the end coming. We all see the end coming. You want to deny that it's coming. But hell of a distraction to have a team and see that 2.5 back in the wild card race. Again, a lot of teams to jump. But if you're a glass half full, it's 2.5. That's manageable.
How do you view this team? That's how do you watch this team? Because I watch this team, and I've been out at the ballpark. I was out there a couple of days this week, a couple of days in the Philly series. I still have a hard time viewing this team with the lens of they're a contender for a playoff spot. I view them on a night-in, night-out basis more with the thought of, boy, that's a nice find.
Yeah.
You know, boy, Yastrzemski, nice find. Dickerson's got some power. Pilar's a better player than I thought he was. Mm-hmm. Like, I thought Pilar was all glove, a little bit of power, not much else.
Right.
Pilar's a grinder. He's a guy that lifts his team just by his ability to show up and the energy that he plays with. And then he hits the ball hard.
Yeah.
He's a more productive player than I thought he was. That's a nice find. You go out and you fix the second base situation. Mm-hmm. You know, that was one of the weaker spots where you could fix it and maybe make a change, as beloved as Joe Panik was.
Did that deal surprise you because of how beloved Joe Panik is? I mean, the Giants tend to, if you were part of one of their championship teams, you're in forever.
It didn't. Somebody had to be the guy.
Yeah.
And it wasn't going to be Belt or Crawford or Posey just based on the money that those guys make in comparison and the future years. The Giants weren't tied to Joe Panik beyond this year if they didn't want to be. And I think Joe Panik was making $4 or $5 million.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a difference between that and the 15, 17, 18, 22, you know, that the Crawfords, the Belts, and the Poseys are making. So, you know, and look, Panik was around for 14 and was huge.
Right.
And he had big hits and unbelievable ABs and the defensive play, obviously, in game 7 that started the double play.
He looked like that was going to be the springboard to one hell of a career, and he was going to be one of those forever Giants just, you know, write it in ink. He's going to be my second baseman for the next decade.
Somebody had to be the guy, though.
Yeah.
And I think the smart money was on him being the first guy to kind of transition away mm-hmm. as you keep the rest of those other guys. But how do you view the Giants? I want to get your thoughts on that, Herbs. 888-957-9570. Because I look at the standings, and the standings tell me they're in it. But when I look at all of the teams in between them and actually making it and some name brand talent on those teams, I keep viewing them more as a team in transition than a team that's really in a pennant race. We'll get into that. We'll also talk with John Taylor of he covers Major League Baseball, Sports Illustrated, coming up next here. It's JD and Herbs on a Sunday, 95.7 The Game.
Now back to 95.7 The Game.
John Dickinson, Michael Urban with you on a Sunday morning. John Taylor scheduled to join us momentarily here. And you at 888-957-9570, 888-957-9570. Giants get the win last night in Arizona. As they win again, Logan Webb, he gets the victory in his major league debut. Brandon Belt, the big hit, a grand slam. And the hits just kept on coming for the Giants. Kevin Pillar, a five-hit night. And the Giants are starting to get hot again after a cold spell in the early part of August. They're 2.5 back at the second wild card. Seems like the second wild card, Herbs, the actual team, it flip-flops every single day. You've got the Cubs now holding that spot. They're a game up on Milwaukee and Philadelphia. The Mets are still in between Philadelphia and the Giants. The Giants now have separated themselves from Arizona by winning the first three games of their series. San Francisco 2.5 out of the second wild card, but they have the Mets, Phillies, and Brewers ahead of them, and the Cubs still holding that spot. So four teams currently that the Giants would have to pass in addition to making up the 2.5 game gap.
Yeah. As I'm looking at the way the Giants have played since the All-Star break, or actually, I'm sorry, since the trade deadline. When the trade deadline passed, it was like, I felt like Farhan had done everything he could have possibly done to appease as many people as possible. I think he rewarded the room in terms of, hey, these guys battled back into it. Because he really was buying and selling at the same time. And, you know, what that means for the future, I don't know, but I know that this year so far, this is a success. Not so far. Right now, JD, I think this is a successful season for the Giants. I'm willing to call it a success right now.
Absolutely. If this team wins, I said it to somebody this week, if this team wins 82, 83 games, that's an incredible year.
Yeah.
And it's one of the best jobs I think Bruce Bochy's ever done. I know that gets thrown out. I know he's won three World Series.
I agree with you. I mean, just the amount of turnover he's had. And for their chemistry has gotten stronger and stronger, and they feel like a team that goes out there expecting to win now. And they did not go out there, like, since the All-Star break in 2016, they looked beaten before they even took the field. They were anemic. They looked like some emaciated thing off to the side of the road. And now they're robust, they're young, they're athletic. And that's why I say, even if they fall off a cliff right now, I'm still going to look at this year as job well done.
Well, and it feels like if they were going to fall off a cliff, Herbs, they would have fallen off.
Yeah.
The fall would have continued. It would have continued into the Philly series. The A's, we've seen them thump the Giants a lot the last few years. And on into this weekend. I mean, Arizona comes in. Arizona basically punted, but came in with the same record as the Giants.
Right.
Into this weekend. But the Giants go down to, I mean, really anytime the Giants are on the road, they look like a normal baseball team because they have enough functional offense now to where, you know, they're going to put up enough runs to where the pitching can just be solid and you've got the bullpen and you can kind of hang on for a win.
Yeah, just like they drew it up in spring training, right? Let's just lean on our power and hope we get enough innings. Hey, how about Jeff Samardzija? I owe him an apology. I've been down on that dude for a number of years.
He's been awful.
He has.
Until this year.
Like, I don't know that I need to apologize necessarily, but I'm glad to see him actually being productive because I don't know that there's a whole lot of value in an innings eater, and that's what he's been called. And, okay, in this day and age, do we really need one of those? No. Five and dive is okay now. Five and dive used to be like, you would mock somebody for going five.
You know what?
Now that's what you want.
Hey, guess what? I'd rather have Jeff Samardzija go 5 1/3 and give up 2 runs than go 7 and give up 6 runs.
Right.
Because he was at a lot of those starts.
Absolutely.
Where he'd go 6 or 7, but he'd give up 5. And what's the point of that if you're going to take a loss?
Yeah, but he's been fantastic. I don't know what's exactly behind it. I see that he's throwing it seems like his fastball. He might be going to more 2-seamers than 4-seamers. His 4-seamer is pretty flat. The 2-seamer, he gets a little bit of a wrinkle in it. And it looks like he's leaning on that just a little bit more, whereas basically he's learned he doesn't need to try to overpower people.
I'm going through the National League standings right now, and I'm just looking at it because the Giants won again on the road. So the Giants are 34-28 on the road. 34-28 on the road. The Dodgers are 34-27 on the road. Atlanta's 38-25 on the road. The Giants have the third best road record in the National League.
That's crazy.
Like, they are just a normal, good baseball team on the road.
I still don't understand when what's now Oracle Park, became...
They're 6 over on the road, and they're 4 under at home.
And remember when they used to come home, and it was like, you expected them to win every single series at home, if not sweep. And there was a time where I felt like there was a big-time home field advantage. at Oracle, and there isn't anymore. It's almost like the yard has gotten in the home team's head more than it gets in the visitor team's head.
I think a lot of teams come into Oracle Park and they love it. They love the vibe.
Yeah, I know.
They're juiced by the atmosphere, and they just don't. They just go play. And sure, you'll see guys hang their head if they hit one out to right center that yeah. you know gets knocked down that mm-hmm. would have been a home run. You'll see that from time to time. But I think I'm with you. I think the Giants hitters, for the most part, especially the guys that have been around,
belt,
they would be shrugging their shoulders before they'd even step up. And I think that vibe is just not good to have. And yeah. as you've shuffled through different players, you know, Kevin Pillar hits well at Oracle Park.
It's not in his dome. He hasn't been around long enough for it to get in his dome. But you look at Brandon Belt, worst body language ever, king of the slumped shoulders. He's hit a ton of balls out there. I think that's why he seems beaten when he gets in the box at home.
How do you view this team, Herbs? I was having this conversation with somebody earlier in the week, and we were talking about it a little bit before the show. We talked about it a little bit in the first segment. I still have a hard time viewing this as a team that's in the pennant race. Mm-hmm. It's more of, boy, this is a team in transition that's got some pieces that could be around next year, but maybe decline next year. Yeah. But it's fun to watch. I'm entertained. I want to put the TV on today at 1:10 and right. watch Madison Bumgarner take the mound and see if they can keep it going, all the while not really fully believing that they've actually got a shot to steal one of those right. wild card spots.
You know, the first time that I looked at them as, okay, maybe they can do that, this was Friday, when they coughed up that lead and then they go ahead in extra innings and then they allow the game to get tied in extra innings and then they hit their final home run of the night. Like, that's the type of win where, if you do make the playoffs, you're looking back at that game and saying, that's when I knew we were for real. That was, they could have so easily, after the Diamondbacks came back on them in extra innings, just, all right, we're not going to do this 15, 16, 17 inning thing. Let's just go. But no, they battled. They got another home run, and they won a game that no way in hell they would have won last year.
Chilton Autobody text line echoing your sentiment. Never thought this season would be competitive. Pleasant surprise. And why most fans have come back to watch. The Giants have had a little bit of an uptick in attendance. The last few years, they lost before they even played a game. That from Will in San Francisco via the Chilton Autobody text line. Yeah, a lot of the crowds were dipping into the low 30s in terms of just the paid attendance. Mm-hmm. Back the last couple of homestands toward the 35, 36 range yeah. where it was slipping right around the 30 range before.
And again, it's just, I'm so happy for Bruce Bochy to not go out. Like, can you imagine how uncomfortable it would have been if, let's say they're 16 games below 500 right now in mid-August? I mean,
well, he doesn't want it to be about his final month and a half with a losing team. He didn't want it right. to be about that.
Right.
Like, all these platitudes for Bruce Bochy and his team stinks this year. Mm-hmm. Like, that. Yeah, he would want that would make him extremely uncomfortable.
Well, and remember, I think it was 2010. Was that when Bobby Cox
yes.
was in his last year?
Yes.
And just getting to the playoffs for the Braves, I touched some Braves fans. I was out there for that series. Mm-hmm. It meant a lot just because it got Bobby one more run. And you look at all the respect that Bobby Cox had around the game. The Giants all were up on the top step, like saluting him when the series was over.
It was a great moment.
And that's the type of moments that I think Bruce is going to run into in the final month. I know he doesn't want it to be about him. Too late. By being so good and such a big part of the Giants fabric and community, you're always going to be part of it. Bruce is always going to, no matter what, Bruce is going to come to San Francisco and be a god.
888-957-9570, 888-957-9570. John Dickinson, Michael Urban here with you on a Sunday morning. We're still trying to connect with John Taylor, covers Major League Baseball for Sports Illustrated. If we get him connected, we'll throw him on the line. But we're kind of looking at where the Giants are right now in the standings. And look, they're going to get a shot at the Cubs, mm-hmm. who currently have that second wild card slot locked down, although it's tenuous, only that one game lead over Milwaukee and Philadelphia. But the Giants play Arizona today. They travel to Chicago, and then they've got three with the Cubs here coming up Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday.
Yeah, like you said, you're anxious to get home, turn the TV on at 1 o'clock and watch the Giants. When's the last time you looked forward to watching a Giants game? Like, actually planned a day or an evening around watching the Giants?
Yeah, it's, boy, I'm trying to think when it picked up for me in July. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, covering the Warriors as I did and right. each round of the playoffs and travel and the, you know, the finals end, and it's basically that Father's Day weekend.
You got to miss a lot of the really bad baseball.
No, and it was, yeah, I was basically, it was every Bumgarner start, if I was around,
right.
was basically the assignment. If mm-hmm. if Bumgarner's pitching and you're in town,
right.
because the Warriors aren't playing somewhere, that's where you got to be mm-hmm. on that night. And but I'm trying to think, because it was, they played, but even it carried into the, yeah, you had the draft after that, and then you had Summer League even after that, and the Giants got hot essentially June 30th. I'm trying to think when it really hit me, because I was doing the shows, I was filling in for Bonte, so I was with Steiny and Guru, mm-hmm. and Guru was on this kick of, well, the math, and the Giants are still in this thing, and this is when they're, you know, 4, 5, yeah. 6 games under 500 still, mm-hmm. and I'm thinking, Guru, you're crazy. Like, they're not in this thing. And I go, the only, and they were headed to the All-Star break, and I said, Goo, the only, you know what's going to, it's going to take for me to really believe, they got to get to 500. Mm-hmm. They got to get to 500, and then we'll see where they're at. And he says, but they can get to 500, right? And I'm thinking, yeah, they can, but here's what they're going to have to do. They're going to have to come out of the break, and they're playing Milwaukee and Colorado.
Right.
I said, they're going to have to come out of the break. They're going to have to go, you know, 6-1 or 7-0 in those games. They're going to have to come back and play the Mets and go 3-1 or 4-0 in those games.
Right.
And then sure enough, they did it. So I think that's when it kind of hit me. And then they played the Cubs after that and took 2 of 3. In that series, they had the wild extra inning game. Mm-hmm. I think it was the second night. They came back late the first night and then won the second night in a wild extra inning affair. It was one of those Bumgarner starts. So I think it was right around that first weekend, first 10 days after the All-Star break, where I thought, okay, this team might have a little something going. They got to 500. They pushed a couple of games over. Let's see if they can keep it moving. Mm-hmm. And they kept it moving enough to where Farhan Zaidi didn't completely sell.
Right.
He bought and sold, I guess, but he didn't give up Will Smith, the anchor of the bullpen. He didn't mm-hmm. give up Bumgarner, the anchor of the rotation.
And how about, he was dealing from a position of strength when it comes to the bullpen. And while I don't expect Will Smith to be a forever Giant, he's done something this year that I think is commendable, because everybody, when you hear Will Smith, before this year, Giants fans hear the name Will Smith, they're like, who? They roll their eyes. Oh, I've been hearing about Will Smith forever. When is he ever going to pitch? It's like we didn't really even know who Will Smith was or what he's about. Now we see. Now that he's 100% healthy, legit big league closer.
Yeah, which is remarkable.
Because mm-hmm.
I wouldn't have thought he was
Me neither.
A closer. I would have thought, okay, he's a setup guy, an inning guy.
Right.
Not your loogie.
Mm-hmm.
No, not your lefty only facing other lefties right. necessarily. Although that might be going by the wayside. They really are going to implement that three batter rule.
Oh God, I hope they don't.
How brutal is that?
So bad. How about the is it the Atlantic League?
There's a couple of leagues where they just do weird stuff.
Right, but one of them had plans to move the mound back 2 feet in the second half of their season. Maybe the dumbest idea I've ever thought of.
Wow,
I don't know if they followed through with that, but when I read it, I'm like, yeah,
just to see.
You're gonna kill guys' arms. They've
yeah.
been thrown 60 feet 6 inches their whole life.
That's
and
the
now
first thought.
62 feet. It's ridiculous.
But why would you even think about doing that?
I guess to increase offense. Your 89-mile-an-hour fastball is now 83 because you're throwing from behind the mound,
and all the pitchers will break down.
Right. Exactly. Crazy. So, what is the Giants' identity to you, JD? Do they have an identity as a team?
I'm not sure that they do.
I'm not sure either. I mean,
it's remarkable the mix. It's guys that have been here that aren't being asked to do much
mm-hmm.
with Bumgarner, and Bumgarner's been great, and they've won what 9 of his last 10 starts coming
yep.
into today.
Yeah, he's been phenomenal.
Will Smith's been great, and he's been around, but
How about Pablo Sandoval being a key to the Giants season? Who saw that coming?
He's been the only guy that they had that the ball jumps off his bat like the guys that they've acquired from other organizations. Yeah. That's the biggest thing that stands out to me about this whole thing is how the players that Farhan Zaidi has acquired from other organizations, how their swings look different and the way the ball jumps off their bats looks different.
Mm-hmm.
And it's young guys, older guys. I mean, I know Yastrzemski's he's a rookie, but he's 28. But Yastrzemski, Pillar, Dickerson, Solano, even Stephen Vogt, who we all know could hit he's healthy because of his time with the A's. But all of these guys, it just looks different when the ball leaves their bat compared to the guys that we've been used to. It shows you that the evaluations were off somewhere.
Right.
Like it really, like, and that was something I kind of wondered. Like, what's the difference between the Farhan Giants and the Sabian Bobby Evans Giants? What's it going to look like?
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you watch them play every day and watch them play at the beginning of the year to now, you can see the difference in the type of player they're looking to acquire versus guys that either they couldn't get before or maybe weren't on the radar before. I mean, I know I know Donovan Solano was a guy that the Giants did have on their radar before.
Yeah.
And I know Pillar was a guy they actually had on their radar before, but they never were able to consummate the kind of deal to get him around. But Farhan's able to go get these guys and find them and shuffle through others like Yastrzemski, and they've been productive.
Well, do you think it has something to do with the way – look, I've heard too much about launch angles and exit velocity and all the new buzzwords, but that you're noticing the guys from outside the organization, their swing looks and sounds different. I mean, what is it? Is that something that maybe one organization or these organizations – are teaching that the Giants aren't? Because we all know the whole three true outcomes thing. I hate that about today's game, but it's not going anywhere. So either embrace it or fall behind. And clearly Farhan has embraced it, but I don't know. I don't think they have an identity yet. I don't think if you ask them what their identity is, they would just say gamers, we play hard. They'd give you cliches, right? But I don't know how to define this team.
I really don't. Give me what's one word? Maybe we'll throw that out there. 888-957-9570. 888-957-9570. Give us your one word description for the San Francisco Giants. Chilton Autobody text line already chiming in on the 510. Lucky. Lucky.
Lucky to have bad competition.
Exactly. All right. Giants identity is a team lucky to have bad competition. I'm not sure the competition's that bad. Like everybody,
pretty sure they're all in the big leagues.
And here's the thing that I always wonder. And you've covered the game for a long time. Is the competition better or worse when you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6? When you have six teams that have a shot that are all battling each other, even if the overall record isn't as good, is six teams that have a shot going up against each other, is that more or less competitive than two teams that are 18 to 20 games over 500 that are battling it out for a spot, but the teams below them stink?
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's all semantics, right?
Is it because those two teams, is it because Tampa Bay and Oakland, let's say, in the American League are far superior, or is it because Boston, the Angels, Texas, the White Sox, Toronto, Seattle, Kansas City, Baltimore, Detroit really stink by comparison to the bottom eight teams in the National League?
Well, I can say with certainty the Orioles do truly stink. That's all I got. I think Farhan would...
I mean, the worst team in the National League is eight games better than the worst team in the American League. Actually, eight games,
I mean,
and six games better than the second.
Is that parity? Or is it?
Well, some would tell you that
lack of competition,
and some would say it's because the middle teams stink.
Right.
So the bottom teams are able to beat the middle teams more because the middle teams aren't as good. It is semantics. I don't know what the answer to that is.
When you look at the AL wild card standings and NL wild card standings, it's pretty. Look, I consider the A's are absolutely a contender. I expect them to make
the A's are one of the best. I mean, the A's are a top probably eight team in baseball.
Yeah.
I mean, I would, if I'm just off, Yankees, Dodgers, Astros, that's three, Indians, four, put the Braves in there, five, Twins, six, and then the A's are right there.
Right.
I mean, the A's are a top seven, eight team.
And they're contenders, no doubt about it. I expect them to make the playoffs, and if they do get there, I think they got a shot at winning their first playoff series. The second playoff series in the Billy Beane era, they've won one.
They have 2006,
right, and then got swept by the Tigers in the ALCS. I think this team has a chance.
Yeah, I do too.
And Bob Melvin, man, I know he's won a couple of Manager of the Year awards, but it still feels like he's hugely underrated, man. That guy is great.
I think especially when what Bob Melvin has to deal with is different from what other managers have to deal with in terms of, and Bruce Bochy's getting a little taste of it, I think, this year, which is something very different for Bruce Bochy, but just the, you know, we're taking this guy away from you right now that you might want to keep around.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure the clubhouse is cool with it.
Right. Right.
You know, he's going to be back in a month or 2 weeks, but you know, this guy that's pitching well, we're sending him out because we want an extra hitter for the next series.
Right. I mean, the roster manipulation. Also, I think the fact that the it's the injured list, not the disabled list, that it's 10 days now. I think that's significant. I think the smart teams are learning how to, you know, make that work for them.
Yeah.
You know, a guy's
exactly. You build your roster now series to series almost, as opposed to you have your 25 or your 26. And that's just smart. I mean, I don't.
Sure.
I think the Giants were. I do think the Giants were deficient in that thinking compared to other teams. They're behind the curve.
Yeah, there's no
doubt. If the Warriors were light years ahead, I think the Giants were behind.
Well, and have you been surprised at how well, or I mean, we don't see him interact a whole lot, but clearly they're not butting heads. Farhan Zaidi and Bruce Bochy come from two, I mean, one's old school, one's new school.
Yeah.
And I wondered how that dynamic was going to work, especially when Farhan is shuffling the players in and out that Bruce has to deal with.
I wondered as well, and I actually thought it had the potential, and this was before Bruce announced that he was going to retire at the end of the year. I actually thought there was a potential for it to work out pretty well because Bochy wants talent. And if Farhan's going to get him better talent than he's had, Bruce Bochy was going to be on board with it, especially if it came from some guys that can hit the ball to the ballpark. And you know this, you know, Bruce Bochy loves thump.
Yep.
He loves power.
Yep.
He likes power arms, and he likes guys that can hit the ball out of the ballpark. He's won and managed all kinds of different teams in his career, but he likes guys that can go deep and that are a threat in the middle of the lineup and up and down the lineup. So if you're telling Bruce Bochy he's going to get more power and more pieces, because that's the other thing about Bochy. If you give him even a decent roster, an average roster, but a deep roster, bullpen and bench where he can mix and match, he's been awesome at that his whole career.
Yeah.
So I actually looked at it under the prism of it could really work well, almost to where I was somebody saying I wouldn't be surprised if he even came back beyond 2019. Now, this was before he had announced that he was going to retire at the end of 2019.
Right.
So clearly I was wrong on that. But I think we've also seen that it probably could work if Bruce Bochy had decided he did want to stick around for a couple of more years.
Right. Now, I think he probably appreciates the fact that Farhan, I don't want to say is impatient, but it seems like he knows exactly what he's looking for. And so, all right, we're the land of opportunity. You're young. We'll give you a shot. We'll give you multiple shots. But we're not going to give you an endless supply of shots, which it felt like the old Giants brass was a little bit maybe too patient.
Yeah.
Whereas Farhan's like, okay, you can either do it or you can't. Gives you maybe a week to 10 days, decides whether you're going to stay or you're going to go, and shuffle in the next guy. I think Bruce appreciates that.
888-957-9570, 888-957-9570. It's JD and Herbs here on 95.7 The Game.
Now back to 95.7 The Game.
All right, John Dickinson and Michael Urban with you on a Sunday here, 888-957-9570, 888-957-9570. We'll hope to connect with John Taylor maybe at some point here. A little miscommunication with him. Robert Mays of The Ringer coming up at about 9:20. We'll switch gears and talk some football. Herbs, the 49ers are in Denver right now. Walkthrough later today after a couple of joint practices with the Broncos and their preseason game number 2 tomorrow night. So the 49ers, the last team to play their second preseason game.
I think teams get more out of these joint practices than the actual exhibition games.
No question.
First off, there's more reps for the ones
in, no question,
in joint practices. And I just know they're so happy to be able to beat on somebody other than their teammates. That's like, I love the joint practices because you got people, I mean, it's hot. It's the, you know, there's dog days of August in the NFL too.
Yeah. I mean, it comes after about the first 4-day block, basically training camp. It's a 4-day block and an off day. Mm-hmm. And a 4-day block and an off day. And right. Then they kind of back time the remaining days into whenever their first game is.
Right.
So basically by the start of that second 4-day block, so by the 5th or the 6th practice, mm-hmm, that's when it's the dog days.
Yeah. There's only so many injury updates you can get. There's only so many, you know, updates on how this coordinator's going to change that and this player worked on this in the offseason. It's much to do about nothing, yet we love it. I mean, we can't wait for it. We're told that football's back about 15 times a year, it seems like, right? The draft, the combine, the playoffs, the exhibition opener.
Yeah.
It's a little bit like baseball spring training, where you get worked up and excited for something new, and then that new comes. It's cool for a couple of days, and then it gets boring, and you know, you're back in the same cycle.
When do the real games start?
Right.
Oh, 5-6 weeks
yeah, right,
from now still?
Yeah.
Yikes.
Brace yourselves.
Let's get to Pete in Livermore. Pete, you're up first here on 95.7. The game with JD and Herbs. How are you, Pete?
Great. How are you?
Good.
Good. I was just calling. You guys were talking about the A's. I was just wanted to chime in real quick about that, how you guys were talking about how Bob Melvin, you know, he has done the best with what he works with. I was comparing, you know, the other leagues like the Yankees and the Dodgers, like being a 5-star restaurant with the ingredients and all the staff and everything. And Bob Melvin seems to be like the taco truck guy. You know, he's got to do it the best he can and make the best, but he's still got, you know, satisfied customers. So I just think Bob Melvin needs a lot of credit, and the Oakland A's are a lot more exciting, especially with the series they just wrapped up or are wrapping up with the Astros. That was huge. They needed it this year. So just getting your thoughts on that.
Thanks, Pete. Appreciate the call. Look, the A's had a few coming for the Astros,
mm-hmm,
if you look at the way that season series was going,
right,
coming into this thing. And we'll see. I mean, they're going for a 4-game sweep as well,
right,
today over at the Coliseum.
They're, what, 6.5 back in the division?
6.5 back in the division. So you get today.
Is the division out for you?
If they lose today, yeah.
Okay.
So that was how I viewed it going in. I thought, well, if they sweep 4, then you're 5.5 out with basically 6 weeks to go.
Right.
It's a long shot still, but it's doable. If you even lose 1 game of the 4, which let's say they lose today, it's 7.5.
Right.
So 7.5 I don't think is doable.
So if the A's close out a sweep tonight, you think...
Here's the crazy thing about the A's, though. Just to jump in real quick. And this is something... We're talking about all of, you know, what blows you away about the... Just looking at the standings, the thing that blows me away more than anything is how many times I've looked at the standings in the last 2 weeks, as well as the A's are playing, and they would not be in the playoffs.
Right.
Including today.
Right. That's nuts.
They would not be in the playoffs. Although, they're gaining ground on Tampa Bay while they're playing Houston, and Tampa Bay's playing Detroit. So if you're gaining ground when you're playing Houston and they're playing Detroit,
right,
you're in good
shape. Right.
I think they're going to end up in the wild card game.
Do you think... The rest of the country, do you think they feel like they've got that the A's have a legitimate shot at running the Astros down? 6.5?
No, nobody does. It's on nobody's radar.
Right.
And if they win today, it might, the A's swept the Astros.
Yeah, if they close out a sweep, this will be when newsrooms across the country will basically say, all right, now let's start paying attention to the A's.
Right.
Not a ton of attention to the A's, but let's make sure the A's don't sneak up on us.
Well, and then the Yankees are coming in after that, too.
Right.
So, I mean, that's a big deal in addition to it. But, no, I think the A's are going to end up in the wild card game against Minnesota or Cleveland, whoever winds up, you know, winning that division.
Do you think they'll start an actual starting pitcher?
Yes. Yes. I do think they will start an actual starting pitcher. But, yeah, I'm looking at this season with the A's and the Astros. And yeah, they've won the last three. So it was 1-1, 1-2, 1-3, 1-4, 1-5, 2-5, 2-6, 2-7, 2-8. Yeah, they were 2-9 coming into this four-game series. So now they're 5-9.
This is a nice little series for the A's, though. Even if it's the rest of the country doesn't pick up on it, this is the kind of series where inside the clubhouse. Last year, when I talked to Matt Chapman for about, I did a magazine piece, sat with him for about a half an hour, and he talked about the reason he's so high on that group is because a lot of them were together going through the minor leagues, taking their lumps, winning together, losing together, and I think. The rest of the country is always going to sleep on Oakland because they're West Coast. They don't have a whole lot of money. But I think with the season that they've put together here, you've got to start looking at next year and the year after that as, okay, I think the Astros might be vulnerable in a couple of years. And by then, think of all the young pitching that the A's have that they haven't used yet this year. Guys that, who are recovering.
Oh, yeah, you could
rehab,
make...
You could have a rotation.
You could make a case that the 2020... team is the team.
Yeah.
Like, that's the team that's got the best shot to win it all.
They might, like, when everyone does their season previews next year, they might be predicted first in the
AL
West.
You like the 2019 team, but you could make a case that the 2020 team, because I think once you get to 2021, then you're starting to talk about, okay, our guy's going to be around.
Right.
And is that ballpark going to get built in time to where there's going to be enough revenue to actually pay Matt Chapman $150 million?
There is enough revenue for that already. It's just, do the A's want to spend it? John Fisher's one of the richest men in America.
I know.
Come on.
I get it. I get it. And yes, the A's do have another four game set, I believe, with the Astros between now and the end of the year. I'm trying to find that right now. When is it? It is, yeah, it's in September, the 9th to the 12th. So this will be the 15th game out of 19. They got one four-gamer,
okay,
a Monday through Thursday four-gamer in September at Houston.
So 6.5 back.
But yeah, they were 2-9 in the first 11, and now they've won three straight. And there were a couple of, and the Astros were just destroying them. But two teams as good as those two teams.
Mm-hmm.
I look at this series as the A's owed them probably at least a 3 out of 4.
Right.
To correct that a little bit, even though the Astros are still the better team, so I'm not surprised. And the A's, won a couple of one run games against them, and then they took advantage, as the A's so often do when they're rolling, a couple of one-run wins, and then they won that Garrett Cole, the game that Garrett Cole would have pitched yesterday, but he couldn't because he's got the hamstring, so they skipped him, and some young kid came up and made the start for the Astros, and the A's just, it's like we were talking about. The A's eat the Tyler Beatties of the world for lunch regularly, and they had another one of those games yesterday, especially after two close wins. In some games where maybe they wouldn't have been favored. So
A's are 6.5 back of the Astros right now. JD,
you got to win today.
What would that number need to be on September 1st for you to think maybe the A's could pull out the division?
2.5.
Needs to be that low,
yeah,
huh?
Yeah, 2.5, 3.5.
Oh, okay.
2.5.
Ken Mocha, when I covered him, he always...
Because to me, you got to be able to look... You got to be able to have that series matter, that four-gamer.
Yeah.
So... And the reality is you're probably not sweeping another four-gamer.
Mm-hmm.
So if you win 3 out of 4, that's a +2.
Right.
So to me, you got to be within 2.5 to get you to, have the – if you're 2.5 out, you're a +2 in that series, and you're only half out.
Yeah,
by the way, the A's also have – they have a game against the Tigers that was suspended back in May.
Right, yeah.
That they've got a lead, in the seventh inning in that they got to finish. So that's that's another one. They got almost a bonus. So they're a half game behind Tampa Bay right now, but I count that little bonus game as a win.
Gotcha.
So they're going to finish that game, and then they're going to play that day against Detroit.
When do they go to Detroit?
They actually don't. They're actually playing it out here.
Oh, okay.
Even though the game was there.
Nice.
So they're finishing a Detroit Tigers
sweet.
Home game at the Coliseum.
Okay.
Yeah, in a couple of weeks.
That's a nice little bonus.
Yeah. So anyway. You're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco, a radio.com sports station. Hour number two, it's JD and Herbs here on a Sunday with you. Robert Mays covers the NFL for The Ringer. He's scheduled to join us coming up in about 20 minutes or so. Let's switch gears and talk some football. Nothing like NFL preseason week number two. Woo! Nothing like a couple of joint practices and a nice bounce back, Herbs, early for Jimmy Garoppolo in Friday's practice after the five consecutive interceptions on Wednesday in Santa Clara.
Has an NFL practice performance ever gotten as much attention as Jimmy G's five picks?
That's a great call.
I mean, it's practice. I get it. It's Jimmy G. He's got something to prove. See, but this is just fuel, man. I mean, the people that think the Niners grossly overestimated or overpaid to keep Garoppolo long-term, they're looking at this saying, man, I told you, should have franchise tagged him. There are people out there that are actively hoping that Jimmy Garoppolo just doesn't get it done.
Yeah, but they can get out of the deal. Like, they can get out of the deal after this year if they don't. I mean, the 49ers were at a point where they were in a unique situation because they had money they were going to have to spend on somebody.
Right.
Because they just didn't have a lot of salary cap space tied up. So they were in a position where they gave Jimmy Garoppolo some of the money, and now they can get out if he gets injured again or if he isn't, you know, all that it's cracked up to be. I'm a little bit surprised. Like, I had mapped out how I thought the preseason was going to look for Garoppolo in terms of playing time.
Mm-hmm.
I thought he's not going to play week one at all of the preseason, and he didn't. I thought week two, the joint practices with the Broncos yesterday and Friday in Dove Valley at the Broncos facility, I thought those were going to take the play. That was going to be the week two work.
Yeah,
the lead up, and that's your week two work. You're not going to play Monday night. It's not like he is going to play Monday night. Yeah. How much Kyle Shanahan was guarded on that, but it. At least a series, right? He's at least going to be out there. I'm a little surprised, especially considering how banged up Garoppolo is. I would have thought no go for the game Monday night, play him in the game three at Kansas City, which is where he tore the ACL a year ago.
Right.
Get him back on that field at Arrowhead, and then you don't play him the final week.
And that's the way a lot of teams do it, right? The number ones.
A lot of teams now aren't playing guys at all.
The third exhibition game, third preseason game, whatever, we're always told that's the dress rehearsal. That's the one that matters. So if a star is being held back or load managed, as we say in the NBA, excuse me.
No, you're good. Yeah, load management. You all right? That's all right. 888-957-9570. 888-957-9570. John Dickinson, Michael Urban with you here on a Sunday on 95.7 The Game. I'm surprised that Jimmy Garoppolo's playing on Monday night. I really am.
I'm back.
Good to have you. It's good to have you. I initially thought, hey, we're good. No, and then you know, it was a little bit stronger than anticipated.
It was much stronger than anticipated. I think I just swallowed a bee. Are there bees in here?
There might be.
Get the bees out of here. Garoppolo, what do you have to gain from just playing in one series, which is probably all he's going to play if he plays Monday night, right? So one series. What would the point be to that when you've already had him going against the Broncos number ones for, you know, better part of a week? That's enough risk for the week. Don't let Jimmy G out there on a Monday night. I think this could come back and bite him big time. It's probably making too much of it, but I'm with you, JD. I wouldn't play him.
Well, and especially when you look at the interior of the offensive line. I mean, you've got Weston Richburg, your starting center, hasn't played at all in camp, and the hope is that he's going to be available week one. Your starting center, you've got your starting right guard, Mike Person. He goes down this week, and you know, it doesn't seem like it's a serious injury, but he's not going to play Monday night. So you've got 2/5 of your starting offensive line out.
Yeah, no thanks.
Right up the middle. So you're thinking, okay. You're going to throw Jim. I mean, I wouldn't risk it at all. I wouldn't risk it at all this week. And I would put him out there in the third game. And I do, I do like seeing a guy that, you know, especially a guy that needs to bounce back and knock a little bit of the rust off. Mm-hmm. I would want to get him back out there in Kansas City.
Yeah.
But there's a case to be made for as much as the 49ers have on this season. And I don't know if you've noticed this, but I mean, Kyle Shanahan's, like, the training wheels are off.
Yeah.
It's time to be competitive and win. Like, it's not about culture anymore.
He knows that. Yeah. He's talked about that a number of times.
He knows that if this team doesn't push to make the playoffs or look significantly more competitive, more consistently, I think he knows that it's going to start to come down on him by the end of this season. Not to say that he won't be around next year. I'd be stunned if Kyle Shanahan isn't around next year. The only scenario would be if it's a disaster this year, 3-4 wins again.
Yeah, right.
But I think he knows that they got to be more competitive.
Yeah, I don't think...
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.